What does it mean to be rich? Is it having more stories to share or time to give? Is it being able to keep your loved ones close or travel somewhere far away? At Edward Jones, we believe the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Your dedicated financial advisor will take a comprehensive approach to your financial strategy to help support what truly matters to you. EdwardJones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
I'm Frank Holland, and you're listening to CNBC's Worldwide Exchange. Our show is live weekdays at 5 a.m. Eastern. Listen in. It is 5 a.m. at CNBC Global Headquarters. It's 10 a.m. here in London. I'm Frank Holland. Here are your 5 at 5. Wall Street waking up with some Wednesday whiplash following yesterday's hotter-than-expected CPI report, while the headline number may be the least of investors' concerns. The inflation shocker also flipping the script for the Federal Reserve and expectations for Jay Powell's first interest rate cut since this historic hiking cycle began. MasterCard's Michelle Meyer, she's here to weigh in. Inflation proving to be anything but transitory. Attention shifting once again to earnings and if the first quarter results will be enough to keep the floor under equities. Plus, digging into chips as the Bears beef up their bets against the sector. And later, not just the Fed. Other central banks are set to release their latest interest rate decisions today. It's Thursday, April the 11th, 2024. You are watching Worldwide Exchange right here on CNBC. Good morning. Welcome to Worldwide Exchange, coming to you live from CNBC London. Thank you so much for being here with us. Let's get you ready for the trading day ahead again after that hotter than expected CPI report. Kind of gave everybody a whiplash yesterday. We're going to kick off the hour with a look at U.S. stock futures after a very rough day for stocks. I saw the Dow close down more than 1%. Again, following that hotter than expected March inflation print. We're going to talk much more about that during the show. Looking at futures, looks like the Dow would open up about 100 points lower, actually 120 points lower, taking a dip lower. Actually, while I'm talking right now, the S&P and the Nasdaq both down more than a quarter of 1%. While the major averages took it hard, it was still worse for the small caps and for the transports, coming off more than 2% losses and their first down day in the last four. Yesterday's headline CPI read, it may have been a shock, but even more attention this morning on that super core number, stripping out food, energy, and shelter, coming in at 4.8% year over year. That's the highest level in 11 months, showing that the Fed still has much, much more work to do. This morning, futures contracts tied to the Fed funds rate show traders see rates ending the year at about 5%, suggesting a base case of just one or two quarter point cuts this year. Big shift from where we started, as many as seven at the beginning of the year. Also, we're watching treasuries with yields at their highest level since November. We saw a big jump in yields yesterday after that hotter than expected report. Right now, the 10-year at 4.56%. Okay, that's your setup. Let's now see how Europe is shaping up as this trading day gets underway. Right here with me in London, Sylvia Morrow has more.
Hello, Frank. Well, we're seeing European stocks mostly in the red so far in the equity session. We're only seeing a little bit of green out of France with the CAC 40 just marginally above the flat line. This is after that hot CPI print out of the United States, but also all eyes on the European Central Bank here in Europe as we wait to hear from the Central Bank. And the key question is, will we get some certainty about whether the Central Bank will actually cut rates in June? I want to take you to the sectors and show you what's the picture like at this stage. We have at the top oil and gas stocks up by more than 1%. We have seen quite a lot of strong performance also when it comes to telecoms so far in this, when it comes to utilities, I should say, when it comes to this session. So we're seeing a little bit more appetite for defensive stocks at this stage. But as I was trying to hint at there, when it comes to telecoms, they're the worst performance at this stage, down by almost 2%. This as some companies in Europe are complaining about the possibility that U.S. big companies, tech companies, could actually bid for cloud computing contracts in the EU. Back to you, Frank.
All right, Sylvia, thank you very much. Also, I know you'll be covering that big ECB decision later today, so busy day for you. All right, we want to turn our attention now to Asia, a very volatile session there. Our JP Ong is standing by in Singapore. JP.
Yeah, good morning, Frank. And a lot of markets in Asia closing in the red. And you might say the tone was set out on Wall Street with a hotter than the expected U.S. CPI print that has now cast doubts as to whether or not rates will stay higher for longer. And we also saw yields rising here in the fixed income space in Asia, which thus also weighed on a lot of equity indices across the region. Now, take a look at China, actually, because there was concerns now of deflationary pressures in China after the producer price index contracted by almost 3%, thus also hinting at a possible slowdown in the world's second largest economy. But as you can see there, the Shanghai Composite rallying after opening deeply in the red today, perhaps signs that the national team has stepped in once again to support markets in that space. That the Nikkei 225 is also worth looking at, and also linked to the yen, in particular volatility surrounding the currency, the Japanese yen, after it breached 153 against the greenback. But again, the cabinet secretary and the finance minister of Japan coming in and saying that they are prepared to intervene if the weakness of the yen is excessive, which means that we might see actually pullback, which might be a long-term drag on equities and exporters, which kept the yen actually in the red in today's session. Now, I do want to end with one bright note, and it's not much to write home about, but the KOSPI in South Korea managed to close in the green. And this despite the fact that in the legislative elections today in parliament, the opposition actually won a resounding victory, which might cast doubts on how well the president will, if South Korea will be able to enact some of these corporate reforms. But there are signs now of a lot of foreign investors starting to come in and taking a lot of action and approval, at least, for some of the heavyweights like Samsung Electronics and Hyundai. We'll see if that carries on in South Korea, but that's definitely a market to watch out here in Asia over the coming weeks. Frank, it's back to you.
All right, our JP Ong live in Singapore. JP, thank you. All right, to get more perspective on the markets, inflation and expectations for rate cuts this year, joining me right here in London, Nancy Curtin, Global Chief Investment Officer at Alti Global, which manages or advises on roughly $70 billion in assets. We're also joined by Vance Howard, CEO and Portfolio Manager at Howard Capital Management. Great to have you both here. Nancy, you're here with me in London. I'm going to start with you. What now? A big shock when it came to inflation. We just saw Goldman Sachs change its outlook on rate cuts, moving it down to 2. We started this year at 7. As you advise people to invest their money, what do they do next?
Well, first of all, Frank, it's really important to be diversified. So we don't just own equities. We're a wealth firm. And so we're going to have diversification in client portfolios, and we're going to have portfolios that match their risk profile. But more importantly, we have to look forward now. So we start earnings season on Friday. And our own view has been that earnings could surpass expectations in Q1. And it may be that earnings actually this year trump a less accommodative Fed. So I think we need to focus on earnings. We also need to look to PCE later this month. Frank, you know, at the end of the day, PCE is running about a point less than CPI.
So, Nancy, correct me if I'm wrong. It sounds like you're saying that earnings may come to the rescue and save this market that's been rallying, that if we don't get the Fed cuts or they come later, you know, maybe they could come as late as September. Is that your thesis? Earnings for Q1, by the way, expected to go up 5% year over year.
Well, you know, I've seen different estimates for 4%, but, you know, it's a pretty low bar still from technology. And by the way, TSMC's earnings yesterday, no bad thing to give some hint to where technology, Gen AI, continues. So, yes, that is our thesis, that earnings could potentially trump a less accommodative Fed. It's a heck of a lot better position to be in, where we actually have economic growth in the United States and the Fed having to cut because the economy is so weak.
All right, Vance, I'm coming over to you. Agree with this idea that earnings may be the catalyst to keep this rally going? Or do you believe without rate cuts sooner than later, we're going to see a downturn in the market?
I what Nancy said, I think she's spot on. That's my analysis also. I think the market's in a strong uptrend. You've got an amazing amount of cash on the sidelines. Earnings are strong. You know, it would scare me more if somebody came out and said, we need to drop rates 6, 7, 8 times. That means we've got fundamental problems that are worse than a little bit of inflation. And if you look at the CPI number again, look at one of the big drivers of that was auto insurance. I mean, that's kind of crazy that one sector there is driving up inflation as much as it is. So we're very, very bullish. And we've been saying all along, and you've heard me say this many, many times over the past 2 or 3 months, Frank, buy on every pullback.
All right. So you're still buying on every pullback. So I want to talk about one thing that you have been talking to us all year long about. That's the small caps. They certainly pulled back yesterday, hard hit, down more than, you're laughing, down more than 2%. Vance, you know, I always press you. Also, Tom Lee from Fundstrat has been a big bull on the small caps. The fact that we're going to see these rate cuts, it looks like later than expected. Does that change your thesis when it comes to the small caps?
Well, it does to some degree. You know, one thing you've got to remember, and let's analyze why the 10-year Treasury is so important to small caps, is that you got 38% of the Russell 2000 are showing negative earnings. 15% of the Russell 1000 are showing negative earnings. So they rely on the short-term borrowing power, which is, if you've got higher rates, that really dramatically affects them. But you look at the Russell 2000 on a two-year chart, and it's up pushing towards the upper end of that chart. But if you look on a six-month chart, it's really breaking down. So as much as I'm bullish on small caps, I think there's a hidden gem here, but you've got to correlate it to the 10-year Treasury. It is, man, I don't think it's ever been more correlated to the 10-year Treasury on small caps in history, as far as I've seen. It's kind of amazing.
All right, so I think you may be, I'm kind of translating for you, Vance. You're finally admitting that right now might not be the best time for small caps, because we certainly see some big moves to the upside for the 10-year. I'm not going to press you on that. I'm going to come over to Nancy. I'm going to give you a break, Vance. Coming over to you, Nancy, you mentioned you're a multi-asset advisor.
That's right.
Is right now the time for short-term bonds? We've seen that spike in yields on the short-term, also mentioning the 10-year. Is right now the time for that 60-40 portfolio? Is right now when that could work?
Well, we're a bit cautious on the long end of the bond market in the United States because of the supply. And by the way, it was a Treasury auction yesterday. It didn't go so well, did it? And there is a lot of supply. Having said that, I think what is interesting is the markets are already beginning to tighten for the Fed. You saw the 2-year note go up. You saw the 10-year note go up. The dollar slightly higher. Oil prices are slightly higher. So many of these things, we think, will begin to do some of the Fed's work for them. But we've been cautious on the long end of the U.S. bond market, given supply, fiscal deficit concerns.
Yeah, right now, the dollar at parity with the euro. It gets a lot of people in the U.S. excited about traveling. Something else that you're excited about, we've been talking quite a bit about on the show, gold. Trading right now at pretty much an all-time high. Do you believe gold has more upside?
Well, when you see this kind of 97% quartile move in gold, this is what we've had. I think a little bit of pause here, consolidation would make sense. What is clear is that there's geopolitical issues. We know that there may be some things going on in the Middle East. We've been warned by security services of a Israeli retaliation for what happened in the Syrian consulate. That would be near term an important catalyst for gold, geopolitical concerns. But more importantly, central banks are buying gold, right? So emerging market central banks, Chinese investors, looks a heck of a lot better than property in China. So there is demand for gold. And we do have gold in our client portfolios.
Understood.
As a kind of hedge against inflation and some of those concerns.
All right. Nancy Curtin here in London. Thank you for being here. Vance Howard, thank you as well. And for more on what's driving the markets in the day ahead, head over to CNBC Pro at CNBC.com/pro. All right. We got a lot more to come here on Worldwide Exchange, including the one word that investors have to know today. But first, digging into what were some of the most active stocks following that CPI report, chips. A look at the haves, the have-nots, and if yesterday's weakness means a buying signal today. Plus, much more on the Fed's next move and what to expect from the nearly two dozen Fed heads speaking today. Wait, two dozen? That's not possible, is it? Michelle Meyer, she's here to weigh in. We have a very busy hour still ahead when Worldwide Exchange returns. Stay with us.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
The market doesn't joke around, so why would you? Get serious. Choose Tastytrade. Tastytrade gives you the tools you need to make smarter moves. Dig into data with advanced charting, track profit accurately with order chain trackers, see risk clearly with curve analysis, and trade with low-capped commissions, stocks, options, futures, and more. All on one platform. No wonder serious traders choose Tastytrade. Join the club, genius. Tastytrade Inc. is a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC.
And welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. Taking a look at some of the S&P 500 laggards right now. Right there at the top of the list, we see Paramount Global. Those shares down more than 12%, followed by Solventum, Builders First Resource, and then Deckers Outdoor right there, down almost 8% on the week. Oh, and also the sector laggards. I want to make sure we hit those as well. Real estate, the top laggard, down more than 2%. Followed by financials and then healthcare. All right, turning back to the markets. The fallout of that hotter than expected CPI report and rate cut expectations, really, it hit all parts of the market. That included chip stocks. We're talking names like Intel, Texas Instruments, Analog Devices, Advanced Micro, and Marvell Technology, all falling between 2 and nearly 4% on the day. One semi name that actually avoided all of yesterday's smackdown, that was NVIDIA. It was up nearly 2% on a wave of positive analyst comments. For more on whether the selling may be a buying opportunity, let's bring in Stephen Fox, founder and CEO of Fox Advisors, which covers a number of companies in the chip space. Stephen, good morning. Good to have you here. I'm going to jump right into it. NVIDIA avoided some of the downturn the other chip names did. But on the back of that sell-off in the chip space, is this a buying opportunity? And does it matter what names you buy, or is this simply an ETF buy? Would you buy the ETF, the SMH?
No, I think you got to be selective, Frank. I think there's still some very attractive valuations out there that names like Western Digital, where people are ignoring the fact that they're going to split into two companies and NAND inventories are at four-year lows. So there's companies that are going to be benefits of the inflation trends we're seeing, like Western Digital and Micron. And then there's other companies where maybe they're going to see a little bit more of a pressure on their earnings because of inflation now.
All right. So you're mentioning some pressure on earnings and inflation. One area of inflation that's really impacting chip stocks and other parts of tech is commodity inflation. I'm just looking year to date. Copper moving to the upside, double digits. Silver also moving higher. Aluminum up just under 5%. How does that change, or does it change your thesis when it comes to some of these chip stocks, this rising inflation when it comes to commodities that are key to production?
You know, it depends on the company for sure. So there's companies that will use copper and gold and silver in their production, like a company like TE Connectivity or Aptiv, but they've been managing through that for years. There's other more challenging areas where you're talking about new fab construction costs that have gone up a lot year over year, or just transitioning to a new fab technology in general is more expensive and creates supply constraints. So it really depends on the company. I think in general, you know, because of what's going on in AI, you're seeing what I've been calling competitive procurement, which means everyone has to get in and is worried about availability again on certain products. And that's creating opportunities for these companies to benefit more than less from inflation.
Okay, so, but you say inflation is also impacting, I guess, their customers, whether it comes to data center build out and other things like that. Does that impact your outlook on these different chip stocks?
Yeah, so one of the things that's interesting is we think AI spending has been crowding out some spending on enterprise, traditional enterprise spending. And as that has happened, it's slowed down sort of a recovery in certain CapEx areas, especially with interest rates so high. So things like industrial, traditional enterprise data center, broadband spending outdoors has been slow to recover these last several months. Okay. It's going to happen, but as we head into earnings season, we think maybe the slope will be a little bit disappointing. And part of that is due to inflation and higher rates and things like that.
Got it. So, Stephen, you actually came with some picks for us. One of them you already mentioned, Western Digital, but the other one's Flex, not a chip name. It's actually a contract manufacturer. Kind of got some recognition a few years ago for manufacturing for Apple. Why is this a name that you're bullish on when it comes to tech and the chip space?
Yeah, so it's everything but Apple now. For Flex, I think you can look at companies like Flex and Jabil or Benchmark for that matter, which is a small cap name. But in general speaking, you're seeing because of what's going on with nearshoring, which is a trend that's going to continue if you just pick up the paper every day and look at the global politics of the world. Companies like Flex have massive footprints all over the world. They're able to shift production for major OEMs very quickly from, say, out of China or in Asia to being more global and localized in Europe and the US. And then you layer on that a lot of their internal capabilities around things like power for data centers and and also auto technologies. They're having a very good win rate on new programs. And then you factor in the idea that they're only trading at 12 or 13 times okay. earnings with great cash flow.
Got it.
It's a chicken way to play,
Stephen?
All these tech.
Great. Your picks, Western Digital and Flex. Thank you very much for being here, Steve Fox. All right, coming up here on Worldwide Exchange, the one sector that is seeing the worst of the latest Wall Street rate shock and the stocks that are getting hit the hardest. We have your big money movers. They're coming up when we return.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.
All right, welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. It is time now for your Big Money Movers, Inflation Edition. We're watching rate-sensitive sectors like real estate, which was one of the biggest losers in the S&P yesterday. Check out the ITB, the Home Builders ETF, coming off its worst day since January, down 4.7%, and on pace for its worst week since November. Lennar and KB Home are both down more than 5.5% this week, and they are trading below their 50-day moving averages. Financials also feeling the heat. The KBE or S&P Bank ETF breaking a three-day win streak, falling more than 4% for worst day since the end of January, also down 2.4% so far this week. JP Morgan is down more than 1% this week, while Citi's off by 2.5%. Both report first quarter results tomorrow. And among the midsize and regional lenders, check out U.S. Bancorp and M&T Bank. Both are down about 2.5% this week. Then outside of those sectors, Trump Media and Technology, that remains one of the top trending tickers on CNBC.com, ticking higher today, but that's after sliding 9% yesterday. The stock is down 31% since the parent company of Truth Social emerged with the SPAC, Digital World Acquisition Corp, late last month. All right, as Jim Cramer says, there is always a bull market somewhere, and this week, you don't have to look any further than energy. Our Pippa Stevens joins us now with much more in the energy sector. Pippa, good morning.
Good morning, Frank. Well, in an ugly day for stocks, energy was the lone bright spot, with the sector hovering around its all-time high after earlier this month surpassing its prior record that stood for a decade. Now, despite the recent outperformance, energy is now the second best sector this year. Barclays is among the Wall Street firms that still sees upside. The firm initiated coverage on the integrateds and E&Ps with a positive view, saying, quote, "We believe the sector offers a better value proposition than ever before," pointing to a fundamental change in business model from growth to returns and prioritizing value over volumes. Barclays added that energy stocks are punching above their weight in the sense that they're 7% of the S&P 500's cash flow, but only 3% of the index's weighting. That weighting is around historic lows, despite the fact that the return on average capital employed has jumped amid supportive commodity prices and producer discipline. Exxon is one of their top picks, saying the company is getting back the major mojo, with shares hitting a record on Wednesday. Chevron, Conoco, and Coterra, Frank, are among the other buy-rated names from Barclays.
All right, Pippa, as you mentioned, energy, one of the best-performing sectors this week. Earnings season kicks off tomorrow. What should investors be watching when these energy companies report?
Well, it's really more of the same narrative, and that's a commitment to shareholder returns as well as producer discipline. Now, earnings are forecast to be below where they were 2 years ago, right after Russia invaded Ukraine and oil shot above $130 per barrel. But these companies are still making a lot of money, with WTI over 80. According to the recent Dallas Fed Energy Survey, the break even for WTI is under $40 per barrel. And so when it's at 80, there is a lot of money still to be made here. And I think, Frank, one area to watch especially is the refiners. They've been quietly outperforming all at record highs, and gasoline demand is very strong ahead of the busy summer driving season. So that's one area to have on your radar.
All right, Pippa, thank you very much. All right, coming up, our Bob Pisani lays out the new case for the reflation trade. Much more Worldwide Exchange coming up right after this. All right, welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. I'm Frank Holland, coming to you from CNBC London. Let's get you ready for the trading day ahead. We pick up the half an hour with a check of U.S. stock futures. After what was a very rough day for stocks yesterday, following that hotter-than-expected March inflation print, take a look. You see futures in the red across the board. Looks like the Dow would open 100 points lower, at least right now. With futures near session lows, a look at some of the biggest pre-market laggards on the Dow. Right now at the top of the list, you see Amazon down just about three-quarters or two-thirds of 1%, I should say, followed by Merck, Walmart, Cisco down just over a quarter of a percent. Also this morning, futures contracts tied to the Fed funds rate showing a totally different picture than just 24 hours ago. traders. They now see rates ending the year at around 5%. That suggests a base case of just one or even two quarter point cuts this year. So with that in mind, we're watching treasuries with their yields at their highest level since November. Taking a look at the benchmark right now, you're seeing it at 4.55. We saw a big jump in yields yesterday after that hotter than expected inflation read. For more on the action within the markets, let's bring in Frank Capillari, founder and president at CapThesis and a CNBC Pro contributor. Frank, good morning. It's good to have you here. Let's just jump right into it. We were just talking about treasury yields a minute ago. What are the technicals telling us about the direction of those yields?
Hi, Frank. Thanks so much for having me. Well, so far, as we know, yields have been moving higher this year, but not that strong of a pace. And that's important because if you go back and look at what's happened over the last 3 years, there's really been a series of different phases all along the way. A tepid advance, which then goes into a spiking mode, then a retracement, which forms a higher low, and that gets us to where we are now. So the equity markets have been able to withstand the rate hike so far, but we don't want to see that accelerated again because we saw what happened in 2022. Really, the shock and awe was something that the equity markets didn't like. And so right now, because of what happened yesterday, there's a chance for that to recur again. And one of the things I look at as a gauge for that is just putting a 14-week RSI indicator on that chart. And we can see over the last number of years, when things really got accelerated, that RSI got not even overbought, but extremely overbought, so 80 or 90. That hasn't happened yet. And again, market is okay with rates moving higher. We've seen that now for almost a year and a half. But when that pace gets too fast, that's when things can change and hurt risky assets across the board.
Okay, so we get into watch for those higher lows when it comes to the 10-year on a technical basis. I want to talk to you about the dollar. We mentioned earlier at parity with the euro right now, moving higher, a lot of forecasts that it could move even higher from here. What are the charts telling us about the dollar and how do you see that impact in the markets?
The dollar is a similar story with yields. Yesterday was the biggest move in over a year. And from a technical perspective, now we have a target near 107. And now if you look at a monthly chart of that, that is just the high of a range that's been in place since the end of 2022. Now, a lot of people think that that range can't persist for too long, but I'll point to what happened from 2014 all the way to 2022. That range was much longer, much wider, but overall the market was net flat for 8 years until things really accelerated in 2022. Now, a similar story here, even though we're looking at a monthly basis, if we look at monthly RSI, only got overbought for two different periods over that time frame, at the end of 2014 into 2015, and again at the end of 2022. So same story, where the dollar is proven that it can move higher. The S&P 500 and risky assets have been okay with that. We don't want to see things really okay. Get out of hand on the upside, where things start to move at a much faster pace. It's a very similar story. So I think overall, though, the dollar hasn't proven that it wants to break out of this range yet. So I'd be more of a seller when it gets to 107 at this point, as opposed to buying the breakout, unless things, again, push through in an aggressive way.
So, Frank, I just want to be clear on your thesis here. According to your research, the dollar's been kind of in a trading range since the end of 2022. You believe that's actually been a positive or neutral for equities, but if we see a sharp upside move, that could be a strong headwind?
Correct. Right. And we just go back to 2022 and saw how that played out. Okay. And again, I don't think we're at that area right now, even if rates and the dollar continue to move higher. We just don't want to see that happen too quickly and all at once.
Got it. All right. Frank Capillari, great to see you. Don't get to talk to very many other Franks on TV, so it's good to talk to you today. And to read more of Frank's work, go to CNBC.com/pro. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
All right, turning back to the economy, pain at the pump, stubborn housing costs and higher food prices. They're just some of the pressures that are weighing on consumers. And this morning, investors are turning their attention to producer prices. Those are out in just a few hours, as well as a number of Fed presidents set to speak today. That includes New York's John Williams, Richmond's Tom Barkin, Boston's Susan Collin, and Atlanta's Rafael Bostic, hopefully with fresh hints on the central bank's next moves. Joining me now with some exclusive consumer insight of her own is Michelle Meyer, U.S. Chief Economist at the MasterCard Economics Institute. Michelle, great to have you back on the show. Good morning.
Great to be here. Thank you, Frank.
All right, so even with all these inflation concerns, we've continued to see a strong U.S. consumer. Your data shows that consumer spending isn't really showing any signs of slowing down.
If anything, we actually saw acceleration in March because January was a little bit of a wobbly start. There was a lot of noise in the data, a lot of seasonal challenges. There was acceleration through February and that continued into March. And even in some categories that we haven't really seen that much of a lift recently, like electronic spending, looks like it did better in March. So you're starting to see some goods categories pick up. Which could have something to do with the replacement cycle kicking in. Now, not all, right? So housing-related spend, home furniture, big durable goods are still seeing some downward price pressure, which did show through in the CPI yesterday and also showing up in terms of a bit softer spend there as well.
Yeah, I want to talk to you about CPI in just a minute. I want to focus on some of your data. I've noticed an uptick in online spending. Why are we seeing such a sharp increase in online spending versus in-store spending? I thought we were all trying to get back into the store and have more experiential situations going on in our lives.
Well, I think we were looking for experiences, which we could talk about momentarily. But consumers are also looking for conveniences, and online spending helps to facilitate that. So we have seen what has been kind of a structural trend higher towards greater e-commerce and online spending. It was triggered by the pandemic, but it's proven to be more persistent. And I think that reflects the fact that consumers are looking for a lot of choices. They are looking for promotions. They are looking for the full depth of the market when it comes to a lot of goods categories.
Also, want to get your take on CPI. One of the catalysts for that hotter than expected CPI read, that was insurance. What was your read on just the overall print and some of the other areas that we're looking at, including shelter and energy?
I think, Frank, to your point, it's important with the CPI data to look at the different components because inflation is not uniform right now. Far from it. So you are seeing certain categories where there's a bit of stealth inflation, which in some categories is pretty excessive, like insurance that you mentioned. In general, purchasing a car right now happens to be expensive. It's a big ticket item. Prices have increased a lot and they haven't come down enough in aggregate. Rental inflation is still rising. Other types of services inflation have proven stickier. And I think that reflects the demand side of the economy, which is that we have a labor market that's strong. We had over 300,000 jobs added last month. You have a very low and sticky low unemployment rate. And that is keeping services inflation high, which makes it a difficult decision as we look ahead for what monetary policy might do.
Yeah, you're also forecasting a very strong U.S. economy. You believe that real GDP growth will be between 2.5 and 2.6%. Michelle Meyer, always great to see you. Thanks for being here.
You got it.
All right, coming up here on Worldwide Exchange, we shift from inflation to China's deflation dilemma as leaders face fresh calls for a policy shift on the back of more weak economic numbers. We're live in Beijing with the latest right after this break. All right, welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. It is time now for your morning call sheet. We start with TD Cowen initiating coverage of Visa with a buy rating and a $320 price target. It says the company features a durable, high-margin business built on the leading scale of its global payments network. Shares of Visa right now pretty much flat in the pre-market. Another coverage initiation, this time from KeyBank on Snowflake, giving it an underweight rating and a $185 price target. KeyBank saying it's positive on the company's durable growth, driven by improving cloud migration trends and an expanding product portfolio. Shares of Snowflake fractionally higher. And Raymond James out with a big price target increase on NVIDIA, moving it from $850 to $1,100 per share. It cites demand for the company's chips likely continuing to outpace supply. Shares of NVIDIA right now flat in the pre-market. All right, turn our attention now over to China and renewed worries about deflation creeping back into the spotlight this morning when it comes to the world's second largest economy. Eunice Yoon joins us now from Beijing with much more. Eunice.
Thanks, Frank. Well, March CPI missed at 0.1%, and PPI continued to be a drag, down by 2.8% from a year ago, extending a year-and-a-half-long slide. So the Statistics Bureau cited waning consumption demand in March, seasonality after the Lunar New Year holiday, as the main reason for this decline. And food prices were bringing down the headline CPI number. In addition to that, tourism prices, which have been a bright spot here for quite some time, dropped to 6% from 23% in February. Now, the easing deflationary pressures in the past couple of months, as well as better export numbers and factory activity, had raised hopes that perhaps the economy here is moving on to sure footing. Goldman Sachs, in fact, raised its China growth forecast to 5% from 4.8%. They cited manufacturing manufacturing strength. But Frank, as you were talking about yesterday, this really cuts both ways because the overcapacity and all that investment that's been going into these manufacturers has been weighing down factory gate prices.
You know, Eunice, I mean, you're mentioning what we were talking about yesterday. This is exactly what Fitch was warning about. They believe that deflation posed a risk to the Chinese economy. You're there on the ground. Give me a sense. What is going on with consumer spending? Do you believe it was simply just a slowdown after the Lunar New Year? Or is there something else going on in China right now when it comes to consumers?
Well, as we talked about before, people here are just not very confident about the outlook for the economy. In fact, when we've been going to malls, sometimes the lines that are the longest are the ones for the lottery because there's so much concern about being able to make money and not being able to find a job. One of the things that the government is trying to do is that they've, in the past couple of days, they've been pushing this consumer trade-in policy, which they said would help to boost demand. But I think what's also a factor here is what's happening in your neck of the woods in Fed policy, because with U.S. inflation figures going higher, the authorities here are that much more limited in being able to loosen their policy. The expectation is that the policy is going to remain loose here, but at the same time, the more cuts they make, the more pressure they put on their currency, and they don't want to see capital flight.
You know, Eunice, if the line for the lottery is short, just buy me a ticket. I always heard if you buy a ticket out of town, you have a better chance of winning. I don't know if that's a real thing. Our Eunice Yu live in Beijing. It's always great to see you.
Really good lotteries with that Powerball at like $1.3 billion or whatever it is. That's like, I mean, it's unfathomable over
yeah,
here.
Yeah, I'll get the guys back in New Jersey to buy some for me. Eunice Yu, always great to see you. Thank you. All right, coming up here on Worldwide Exchange, the one word that every investor needs to know today, plus grappling with the reality and the risk of reflation, the tricky environment facing investors, and where the opportunities may be within the markets. And tonight, CNBC lands in Colorado to explore how Denver and Boulder have leveraged the Rocky Mountain lifestyle to create two powerhouse economies. Cities of Success, Denver and Boulder, premieres tonight at 10 p.m. Eastern, only on CNBC. We're going to be back right after this break. All right, welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. It is time now for your WEX wrap-up. Politico is reporting the Department of Justice has opened an in-depth antitrust investigation into Nippon Steel's $14 billion takeover of U.S. Steel. No comment from the companies or the DOJ on that report. Taking a look at shares of both companies, they are down right now. Microsoft is set to reveal brand new AI tools for PC and cloud users at its annual Build conference next month. Vertex Pharmaceutical is buying Alpine Immune Sciences for just about $4.9 billion in cash to gain access to its pipeline of immunotherapies. The deal values each share of Alpine at $65 a share. That's about a 67% premium to yesterday's closing price. The Department of Justice is accusing drug maker Regeneron Pharmaceuticals of fraudulent practices related to the pricing of its blockbuster vision impairment drug, Eylea. Regeneron says the allegations are without merit. Shares of that company down more than 1.5%. We're also watching shares of Costco after it reported a 9.4% sales boost in the 5 weeks ending April 7th, thanks in big part to e-commerce. The company is also boosting its dividend nearly 14%. And the NTSB is conducting a new round of interviews with Boeing and FAA personnel this week as part of its Alaska Air door plug investigation. Boeing shares closing down another 2% yesterday. All right, here's what to watch today. Fresh off yesterday's hotter-than-expected CPI report, we're going to get March producer prices along with initial jobless claims. CarMax and Constellation Brands report earnings before they open. And the ECB is out with its own monetary policy decision in just a few hours. Ahead of that, former BOE member says the U.S. will likely cut rates before Europe. And be sure to catch two exclusive interviews today. Amazon CEO Andy Jassy joins Squawk Box at 8:30 a.m. Eastern. And WeWork and Flow co-founder Adam Newman joins the exchange at 1 p.m. Stocks, they're struggling to find some footing after yesterday's hotter-than-expected CPI report. That fueled a sell-off just all across the board. Our Bob Pisani has more on what the prospects of reinflation, what they could mean for investors.
Frank, the reflation trade is back. A strong economy with earnings still strong, but inflation sticky. Creates a very tricky narrative for active investors. This is a very tough environment for small cap stocks, speculative tech, REITs and utilities. For example, higher rates are generally bad for REITs because REITs rely on debt financing. So rising rates increase the borrowing costs. Higher borrowing costs reduce profit margins. It's also usually bad for utilities because when rates rise, treasury bonds become more attractive due to higher yields. And higher rates also mean increased borrowing costs for utilities. Remember, utilities carry a lot of debt because it's a very capital intensive business. So if utilities can't pass on the higher costs, the equity investors have to suffer. But some sectors may do very well in this environment. The key is that the economy has to stay strong. That will help prop up earnings. The reflation trade means a focus on cyclical stocks. That includes energy stocks, material stocks, hospitality stocks even. Energy and material stocks have already been rising due to higher oil and a still strong economy. Other potential beneficiaries of higher rates with a strong economy are defensive stocks, which tend to be less interest rate sensitive. I'm talking about Kroger or Walmart. Another group that might do well is insurance stocks. Life insurance companies, for example, take the premiums they get from customers and they invest them in bonds. But when rates go up, they get more yield from those bonds. That generates more investment income for the insurance companies. The key, again, is the strong economy with continuing job growth. If that changes, if the job market weakens significantly and all of a sudden we still have higher inflation than desirable, that's called stagflation. That will be a much bigger problem for the markets. Back to you, Frank.
All right, join me now with his take, Sarat Sethi, Douglas C. Lane and Associates Managing Partner, and of course, a CNBC contributor. Sarat, great to see you. I'm just going to jump into it. Agree, disagree with Bob's take that now is the time to go into these cyclical sectors. We already have seen the market broadening out.
I agree. I mean, at this point, Frank, I think the trade is basic materials, commodities. You've seen kind of a lack of supply for many years. Take, for example, copper. We haven't built a copper plant in 10 years. So you look at companies like Freeport or Tech Resources, that's how you want to play this, especially if you see, and you were just talking about China, you see any type of growth globally, that's going to help, especially when rates are where they are. I also like areas like energy, like Schlumberger, which, you know, has great demand going for its products. And, you know, consumer staples. Those are companies that can pass on price increases to their consumers. The key to all this is earnings. Where we are now today with rates going to be higher for longer, you're not going to get market multiple expansion. You're really going to get stocks moving.
So, right, I'm going to jump in. So that's your Wex word of the day. That's your Wex word of the day. It's earnings. So you're really focused on earnings.
Absolutely, Frank, because if you look at where we are, the market is now expecting earnings to grow. And if we don't have that, you're going to get the market to come down. We've already had that happen in some of the tech stocks, but you need the rest of the market, as I call the rest of the soldiers, to come back, and we need stronger earnings.
All right. So at the same time, you're saying earnings could possibly save today. We had a guest on earlier that believed that as well. Earnings expectations, they're actually on the decline. It's slight, but they're still on the decline. So are there certain areas that you need to see earnings expectations beat to keep this market afloat? If we see earnings expectations just come in line, do we continue to see this strong rally that we've seen so far this year?
I don't think you will. I think you need earnings expectations to go ahead, and you need, you know, areas like healthcare, consumer staples, energy, commodities. Those are the areas that I think if you get some earnings beat and growth, you can keep this market. Now, again, the equal weighted S&P is really what I'm looking at, not the top weighted market S&P, because the expectations of a lot of the tech stocks are much higher. So that's where I would kind of look at and say, right, hey, what else is out there? What are some of the companies that are going to do well in an area like this?
Yeah, that's kind of what I was asking you, sir. I mean, do we really need to see some big beats from these tech companies that really dominate the S&P 500? I know you're focused on the equal weight, but the regular index. But you're saying, no, we need to see everything pretty much work out. I want to get to some of your picks for us. They are in consumer staples, as you just mentioned. One is Nestle and one is Pepsi. So you still believe they'll be able to pass along this inflation when it comes to commodities to consumers? Isn't the consumer already pretty stretched?
I do, because I think the thing with that Pepsi and Nestle are they're innovative companies, too. They produce good products that the consumer wants, and they're both really out of favor. So if you look at kind of where they are historically in terms of their multiples and really in terms of their products, and that's what we like. These are global companies that have very diversified product lines. So I like them, solid balance sheets, growing dividends. Frank, and if you can get 5 to 7% earnings growth and a 3% dividend yield, I'll take a 9 to 10% earnings growth story without any re-rating, and you get any of that, you're going to get a stock that's going to beat the market, especially for the next couple of years.
All right, a couple of your picks that you think are undervalued, Johnson & Johnson and Raytheon. Sarath Sethi, it is always great to see you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Frank.
Quick look at the futures before we let you all go. As we mentioned, futures are in the red across the board. It looks like the Dow will open more than 120 points lower right now. Right now, we are at session lows. The S&P and the NASDAQ also firmly in the red. That's going to do it for us. You've been listening to CNBC's Worldwide Exchange. You can always catch us live weekdays at 5 a.m. Eastern.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.